Oh, you made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half Cocktails, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say, a place where we all seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society, meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to shared rules, norms, and respect, we're not even obligated to consider your opinion anymore, because you're not playing ball. The social contract is that important to civil society. I'm your friend and host, Dan, the worshiping Dionysus man. Sipping on some science today, I'd like to welcome any new listeners just joining us. We're here having a great time. We hope you have a great time too. Stay tuned until the end of the show. We're going to be talking about an unbelievable life hack to get your groceries for free, and only the law can stop you. As always, I am joined by some fine and fascinating guests in the lounge today. Today, I am blessed to introduce Jamie Lynn, a druidess who's just so damn good at this. Jamie Lynn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. It's Sunday. How can you not be doing fantastic?
Right. Sunday
fun
day.
Sunday, right?
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. We are also joined by the inimitable Amber, my sister who loves the woo-woo and thinks she's always right, too. Amber, what are you right about today that I'm wrong about?
Well, how much time do you have?
just tee that up for you. about an hour.
Okay. I got about 30 or 40 things that I'm right about that we could talk about. This is your baby show.
Fantastic, fantastic. All right, well, we do have a really fun and informative one for everybody today, brought to us by Goliath National Bank, crushing dreams since 2007. We are going to take a quick look back at the Whiskey Rebellion, 1791.
Ooh, there it is.
We got some hot science news, follow-up on that Mars rover. Got some possible evidence of Martian life we're going to be talking about. And I've come across an updated theory recently published talking about ancient pyramid building with water. We're going to be walking through that a little bit. We've got some bullshit and snake oil involving the G20 and Brazil's attempts to tax the rich. Let me talk about that.
Okay.
Of course, we've got a rousing rendition of Fact Checking Time involving college monies, mating rituals, and boycotts. That's going to be a great time. Can't wait to get there. And of course, we'll wrap things up with a feel-good story about a new drug for the Parkinson's shakes. Seems to be very effective, exciting stuff. We encourage everyone, please reach out to us on social media, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. If you maybe your grandparents want to reach out to us in an email at halfcocktails@gmail.com. Or maybe maybe your great-grandparents want to send us a text message or voicemail at 443-499-8253. Reach out. It's always fun hanging out and interacting.
All of a sudden.
I know. Nobody uses email anymore. Snail mail, that's for your great-great-grandparents. Okay. Anyway. All right. All right. Let's start the shindig. Let's head over to the time machine.
Woohoo, shotgun.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yester in our time machine.
Okie dokie. So it's the freshly born Americas. The Revolutionary War has died down, and the country is burdened with all this debt because apparently war ain't cheap.
Isn't that why our government likes it?
Once the people making money off of the war is in charge, the government loves it.
Yes.
Anyway, so we've got the United States with this huge debt, and good old Alexander Hamilton, Treasury Secretary of, the rapper fame.
I just saw that a few weeks ago, by the way. It was really very good.
I think he said, no, I'm not going to miss my shot to tax whiskey.
Exactly.
That's funny. I'm not going to miss my shot.
He proposed a tax on distilled spirits in 1791 to generate revenue. And it was called the whiskey tax, and it especially hit Western frontier farmers
hard because they were distilling their surplus grains into whiskey to sell. So, and in fact, mm-hmm. in Western Pennsylvania at the time, whiskey was the primary medium of exchange because cash was scarce.
That's awesome.
So we are.
How many whiskeys do I owe you?
Right.
I mean, hey, something to be said for that.
I traded you two sheep's worth of mutton. That's at least 4 barrels of whiskey.
At least.
It did apply to all distilled spirits, but the consumption of the American whiskey was like just taken over in the 18th century there, at the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people out there were war veterans who felt like, you know, they fought and they won the country. And part of their thing was taxation without representation. So why is this federal government right. coming in and taxing us, those bastards?
Why is the new government doing what they said they were saving us from? Go figure.
Right. And on top of that, they felt like, hey, you know, we went and settled land where people were already living, and now those people are attacking us. What would you call those? Oh, yeah, the Native Americans.
Those guys.
They were already living in those frontier areas. So these people just move into their backyard, and then they feel like the federal government has to come protect them. And while they're not getting that protection, they're still having to pay these taxes. People weren't happy, you know, and in Washington County, Pennsylvania, 1791, a tax collector named Robert Johnson was tarred and feathered.
Oh, oh my gosh. That's sending a statement.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's pretty painful stuff. You could die from that.
Oof.
Like if you don't get that tar off.
Yeah, and he probably did.
Not anymore.
Yeah. So they were, so there in Pennsylvania, many of the residents were petitioning against it, and it failed. They tried the extra legal conventions, like they were having their own little side political conventions. How does history keep rhyming? Like mm-hmm. they weren't like officially, you know, to stand up for this tax. They held a meeting in July 1791. At the Redstone Old Fort to select delegates for a formal assembly to convene in Pittsburgh. And they had that convention, and it actually was dominated by moderate people saying, like, let's not get violent here. Let's send a petition. Let's send a petition for redress of grievances to the Pennsylvania Assembly. And the mm-hmm. the U.S. House of Representatives, which were both in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. So they got the. So this is what the government did: was they modified the tax law. The charges included a 1 cent reduction in the tax advocated by William Finley, a congressman from Western Pennsylvania, but that was about it.
Wow. 1 cent. I mean, to be fair, how much is 1 cent in colonial history? Was that a lot of money then?
I'm sure it was a lot of money, but if that's what they're trimming, what's left?
Right.
Like, because there's still a tax. Okay, we'll say at minimum right. it went from 2 cents to one. Even so, it wasn't enough.
Right.
The people appealing for nonviolence, They lost. That was when Johnson was tarred and feathered. I got ahead of myself there.
Wow.
A man sent by officials to serve court warrants to Johnson's attackers. He got whipped and tarred and feathered.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So because of that,
maybe they should be They should be taxing the tar.
There you go. Used not so much of it. Should have increased too much.
Life hack.
Tar. That's the perfect solution. We have a life hack.
Life hack.
The original life hack.
That's great. That's great. They should be taxing the tar. Yeah, so apparently, with all of their tax collectors getting whipped, tarred, and feathered, they tax went uncollected in 1791 and early 1792.
Who's going to go out there and say, yeah, you know, I'm okay. I can live through it. It's great. I'll go get your money.
Right? Yeah. And people were still arguing whether there was a difference between taxation without representation in colonial America and a tax laid by the elected representatives of the American people. So since no taxation without representation was such a big rallying cry, like people are now they're arguing, are we being represented? Is this tax fair? Are they actually representing us? Older accounts of the Whiskey Rebellion did play it off as kind of being confined to that Western Pennsylvania area where the tax collectors dare not go.
They're not tread.
But obviously, this is America, so opposition to taxes existed in all the Western counties.
Always a thing.
In all the states except for all the states in Appalachia, anyway. Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia.
Georgie.
it went uncollected throughout the frontier state of Kentucky, where no one could be convinced to enforce the law or prosecute the evaders. Again, a theme here. Of if people aren't going to enforce the law, what good is the law, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 1792, Alexander Hamilton actually advocated military action to suppress the violent resistance in Western North Carolina.
That's how you get ahead.
But the Attorney General said there was insufficient evidence to justify such a reaction.
Oh, weird how an attorney general is standing down the president again. Mm. Oh, well, I guess that was the first one.
Hamilton was a treasury secretary at the time.
Oh, okay, my bad.
So this would have been two cabinet members arguing. I believe Washington was president. Yeah, George Washington.
Still, cabinet members squabbling.
Absolutely.
Surprise.
Say, that's par for the course.
Then, on top of that, Hamilton recognized that second Pittsburgh Convention as a big threat to the operations of the laws of the federal government. This is something that I see in the workplace all the time, where you got to point out, like, that employee doesn't actually have that power. Why are you letting him do that?
Oh,
yeah.
Right? This is one of those things where he was like, hey, they're not doing this. You don't actually have the power to elect a side slate of presidential delegates, okay? That's not part of the law. If you do that, you're breaking the law. He sent a tax official down there to investigate, and the guy was...
Let me guess. He was tarred and feathered?
Well, no. Because, like, very
surprise.
Inspector Clouseau, he tried to make, like, a travel in disguise. I'll get in the costume and they'll never know it's me. And then, like, pretending to not be a tax official, was trying to intimidate local officials, exaggerating. His exaggerated report greatly influenced the decisions made by the Washington administration. So he kind of came in there, and clowned around a little bit. But his reports and what he sent back, were what, they wanted to hear, right? Washington and Hamilton viewed resistance to federal laws in Pennsylvania as particularly embarrassing since the national capital was in the same state. So, on his own initiative, Hamilton drafted a presidential proclamation denouncing the resistance to the taxes and submitted it to that attorney general.
Wait. Sorry. Didn't you just tell me he wasn't the president? Now he's doing a presidential.
He's not.
Did I hear that right?
We're rewatching Veep. You know that they draft the statement and then the the top politician signs off.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
he drafts yeah. it. Okay. The attorney general edits it, and then they hand it to Washington.
And then, okay.
And then
okay.
Washington signs it, then becomes a proclamation.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So like they're at this point, they're really leaning in. They're really leaning in on the government side, right? Federal tax inspector yeah. for Western Pennsylvania, General John Neville, was determined to enforce the whiskey tax. He was a prominent politician and wealthy still planter, there. Also a large-scale distiller. So they're like, we'll pick a guy who has to pay the tax. And he was initially against it because, you know, he made so much whiskey. But who knows what back
right.
Room deals they did, because he switches and he's like, no, everybody, we got to pay this tax. So they're probably like, look, you can
we
pay
gotta do this
tax. Just get everybody
yeah,
else paying a tax.
Classic.
That's my tinfoil hat. I don't know how they flipped him, but it was probably money.
Or his whiskey would be the crown jewel of the presidential White
right.
House.
Oh, there you go.
We'll
there you go. Him, yeah. We'll give you the. That's actually probably it, because that's above board. Yeah. Oh, he just won a contract.
Yeah,
we like his whiskey.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. That's right? I'm.
But only if
I bet on that one.
Yeah. So this guy. General Neville, and he was a general in the war, so he's got government contacts. He rents a room in Pittsburgh for his tax office, but the landlord kicked him out after the landlord was threatened with violence for renting an office to the guy.
Wow.
And so,
wow.
So the violent aspect of this started to expand beyond tax collectors to anybody who cooperated yeah. with federal tax officials.
Sure.
Right. They started getting anonymous notes and newspaper articles passed around, signed by Tom the mm-hmm. Tinker, threatened those who complied with
Tom
the whiskey
the
tax.
Tinker.
Those who failed to heed the warnings might have their barns burned or their stills destroyed.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. So these tactics started to grow, and people mm-hmm. who weren't using them learned them. And through 1793 in frontier counties of Appalachia, the resistance continued, especially strident in western Pennsylvania, where it initiated. In June, they mm-hmm. burned an effigy of the General Neville, about a crowd of 100
Holy
people
crap.
In Washington County. And then on the night of November 22nd, 1793, men broke into the home of tax collector Benjamin Wells in Fayette County. He was one of the wealthier men in the region, and at gunpoint, they forced him to surrender his tax commission. President Washington
well,
offered a reward for the rest of the assailants, but they were never found.
No, they're too well supported.
I'll tell you what, if you wake me up in the middle of the night at gunpoint, I'll renounce whatever the fuck you want.
Right?
Yeah. That's pretty alarming. And obviously they had demonstrated I'm up to killing people.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Make your choice.
Yeah.
There was some weight behind the threat.
Mm-hmm. And the buildup continued in Fayette County, August 9th. A few weeks later, 30 men surrounded the house of William McCleary, the local tax collector in Morgantown, Virginia, to retaliate. For the new whiskey taxes. McCleary felt threatened enough by that mob that he disguised himself as a slave, ran away from his own home, and swam across the river to
Holy
safety.
Crap. Jeez. You can't even blame him.
No. He also, why are tax collectors so ready to have a disguise? That should tell you something about the fabric of our country at the time.
Yeah. They have that already in their toolbox. I will just throw on a disguise and run away.
It's part of their go kit.
Yeah. Right? The subsequent 3-day siege of Morgantown by outsiders and townspeople led state authorities to fear that the events would influence other counties to join the anti-tax movement. So This is when things really start to come to a head. Let me pull up the.
About 3 days. Some leasons involved there. Just saying,
like, you know, the time frame lines up, the locations all line up,
and the family is from that area, Morgantown and Fayette, and
oh wow,
yeah
our
ancestors were from there, and our ancestors notoriously love their whiskey.
Hey,
so
don't tax my whiskey.
Don't tax it.
Yeah, don't mess with my whiskey. I mean, some of the descendants also love their whiskey, so just saying.
So,
yeah. The family.
So they started, the anti-tax folks started to intercept the mail and go through letters and stuff and look for anti-rebellion sentiments. They found a bunch in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
They had an assembly in Braddock's Field where 7,000 armed men gathered, threatening to attack Pittsburgh. The town avoided destruction by offering supplies and a promise to support the rebel cause.
Wow.
Holy shit. They were going to destroy the town.
Yes, because they went through the mail and they revealed anti-rebellion sentiments. So they were like, fuck it, Pittsburgh's got to go.
Damn. you're at Pittsburgh.
This point... President Washington has begun to understand this rebellion as a significant threat to federal authority. He sent out peace commissioners, but also at the same time mustered a militia from Virginia and Maryland, New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And on September 25th, Washington himself led an army of about 13,000 militiamen to suppress the rebellion.
Wow.
This marked
the
first and only time a sitting U.S. president led troops in the field.
Interesting.
Washington. Wow.
That big display of force, though, scared the piss out of the rebellion. Yeah. they
as it is wont to do.
They kind of dissolved pretty fast. They only 20 men got arrested.
Yeah, shit, the army's coming.
Yeah, right. Oh shit, the real army's here. They went that away. Yeah.
We was just kidding, guys.
The leaders kidding. All fled. About 20 people were arrested, most either acquitted or pardoned. And it ended up being a demonstration of the government's ability and willingness to enforce its laws.
It
set the earliest precedents for a federal response to resistance. Yeah.
That's some crazy stuff, man.
Don't
fuck with the government.
Gotta pay your taxes.
You know, it's how we pay for things.
It is.
Yeah.
The shit deal is those ones who don't pay their fair share.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the real rub.
Yeah, if everybody paid their fair share, we would be able to take care of a lot of our social problems that we face.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do it on the backs of the people that are already struggling. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Also, don't tax my whiskey.
Yes, and don't tax the whiskey. Oh.
I mean, to be fair, I kind of feel the same way about feminine products. Why the hell are you taxing my feminine? I'm ready to, let's go on revolt.
Yeah, but there's a difference there. Whiskey is still We don't have a choice about whether, I mean, I guess we could all get surgery and no longer bleed, but then the world would end. So
That's true.
I agree. I feel like feminine products should be free, frankly. I don't think we should have to pay for them because we don't have a choice.
That would be nice. So there were a few other conflicts leading up to Washington getting in there, but I wanted to just hit the main thread of it, what it led to. Like, we all got a sense that it was building. And we'll talk more about fair taxes later when we get to snake oil bullshit and talk about the G20.
Yeah.
But it is notable that our current government system was not the first one. They tried the Articles of Confederation, and that fell apart because it could not fund itself. There was no tax enforcement methods in that one. and we have our
people are not going to just donate money.
They're not. They're really not.
Sadly,
you got to force them to do it.
People hate to pay for things, even the things that they have
do
to pay for. Like I want that. I want that house. Oh wait, I have to buy it. Oh, that sucks. Anyway, we'll get there. We'll talk about more. But that, there we go. Have it. The Whiskey Rebellion. People don't want to, don't tax my booze. I need that booze.
Or I'll tar and feather you. Right.
Washington himself, badass. Yeah, imagine any president today leading troops in war.
Oof, no thank you. Oh, to war, I guess. Not against their own people.
Not against their own people. That,
well, sadly, I don't think we have much to imagine.
Oh,
leading a group of people against their own people.
Oh, yeah. I remember the National Guard sent to move all those protesters so we could get a photo op at a church.
In the park. Mm-hmm. With his upside down Bible. Yeah, so, remember that.
Anyway. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about some news.
It's time for some news from our point of view. We'd even be glad if we could have a lap or two. It's time for some news.
All right. So I teased it earlier. Welcome to news. That NASA rover that we were talking about the other day on the podcast that found those sulfur rocks has found another set of rocks that are just as interesting, if not more. The sulfur makes us rethink how the volcanic activity and the water activity has gone on Mars. But we have found now a new rock sample with what are called leopard spots. And it has scientists excited because if you're a rock geek or a geologist, Ron, where are you? Ron, calling Ron.
Ron.
This was for you, buddy.
Paging Ron.
the leopard spots often form from life, from micro scale life.
Huh.
That have an interaction with the rock.
Okay.
So they don't know for certain that's where it came from. But they can, when they bring the rock back, they can disprove the non-biological factors that could have formed this type of speckling. And if they do that, then it will be, this is evidence of ancient Martian microbial life on these rocks. This planet once had life.
Wow.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Fascinating.
That's pretty sweet. And if their biome hadn't evaporated off,
right?
Maybe we'd have neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. Mm-hmm. We're destroying our biome. It won't be long.
Well, that was part of the solution to the Fermi paradox. One of the suggestions is, like, why don't we see the universe teeming with intelligent life? Well, because intelligent life can never get past the self-destruction stage.
Right. Oh, shit.
No, it's one of the explanations. Yeah, they're saying we're not unusual. Any biological life gaining an intelligence fast enough to build technology, it's
goes through this.
You're going to go through like, well, are you going to kill yourself off, or are you going to band together? I wish we had some sort of psychic abilities so we could form a hive mind.
Yeah, right.
That hive mind.
Borg, unite.
There's a concept for you.
Okay.
I think we have tangent. A better chance of finding someone with psychic abilities to tell us what happened.
In other words, not highly likely.
Well, the we would all need it, because if it's just one person, you either don't believe them,
we'll tar and
or
feather
you
them.
Do believe them and you don't trust them. And we tar and feather them.
Yeah.
And we tar and feather them, because that's what we do.
Hey, at least we're consistent.
Would you put a chip in your brain to have a universal human hive mind?
Like, hell no.
Would not do it like Borg style?
Nope. No way.
No.
Even if it meant peace.
I've seen
on Earth
the reports on Elon Musk's chip, and yeah, no, he's not there yet. No.
So I've seen the reports on the damage breast implants can do, and if there's anything that this country values, it is the woman's breast. And if we can't even get that right, okay, I'm not letting them mess with my brain.
Right. Don't overthink my hypothetical. Aliens have come along and they've said, here is the perfect brain chip. All you got to do is, if everybody accepts it, you'll have a hive mind. You won't. It'll end all war. It'll end all hunger, and you can work together.
I think I've seen that movie. I'm not sure I want to live it.
You're saying no because you don't trust the aliens.
Exactly.
Even if the hypothetical says the aliens are 100% trustworthy.
Oh, if the hypothetical says they're 100% trustworthy, sure. What could go wrong?
What I'm saying is, to me, the heart of the question is, would you give up your individuality for a true, positive human hive mind situation? Regardless of how it shows up. Even if it meant complete peace and prosperity?
That is a good solution. No, because what good is peace and prosperity if we're all the same?
We wouldn't.
If we're not unique and individuals and we don't have our own personalities, and then how is that? Then we're just basically a bunch of drones. Like, that's you're describing ants.
I was going to say, we're worker ants and we're just performing surgery on each other to get by.
Yeah, like, I don't want
would
to
you
give
do
up
it, Dan?
Who I am for anyone.
Would you do it, Dan?
I would. First of all, who are you to say the ant doesn't love its life?
True.
But the ant doesn't know any better. We would be knowing better. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry, I keep interrupting you. I apologize.
Just because I am linked into the hive mind and we are all in agreement on the proper actions, how would that diminish me? I'm still in the hive mind. Myself is part of that hive mind. My body still likes the things it likes. I can still feel joy. I can still feel love.
In your setup, you said that we would be giving up. Didn't you say we would give up individuality?
In the terms of, what work do I do today? It's not Dan coming up with it. All of us at the same time are like, okay, here's what needs to be done. You got to go off and do this. You got to go off and do this. We're all linked in a hive mind, but I'm still an individual person. I'm still an individual body that's linked to the hive mind, but the idea of Dan as a separate entity is gone. That individual idea is gone because I'm not Dan the individual, I'm Dan, the appendage of the hive mind.
Yeah, see, that does not
sound.
There's
a lot to talk over. There's a lot of variables here. It's a great idea. It's a great thought exercise. But I think there's a lot of variables that make it seem inconceivable. The basic idea, I get it. It would make sense. And if we could save ourselves that way, I don't think humanity would go for it, but
I agree with you. I don't think they will.
It's an interesting concept.
Let's talk about the other paper that I came across in the journal ResearchGate, a study of the Pyramid of Djoser, Djoser. It was a proto-pyramid. So one of the types of pyramids I point to when people say aliens did it, and I say, then how come we have the proto-pyramid basic-ass version before we had the Pyramid of Giza Deluxe Luxor version? right?
Right.
we did it. Anyway, they were examining that. This was the final resting place of the first or second pharaoh of Egypt's third dynasty, the Old Kingdom Pyramid. The pyramid itself, it rises from the Saqqara Plateau in six steps to a height of around 60 meters, about 180 feet, right? And they didn't, sadly, the architects didn't, like, write a book on how to build pyramids. So we are still kind of scratching our heads. Like, we can guess, but we don't know. And some of the modern ideas are using hydraulics and water. Instead of using transporting the heavy stone blocks on rollers up ramps to get to the height, people are coming up with ways that they would have used the watersheds near the pyramids. So
that makes sense.
In this study, and they were surveying those watersheds, and they found features of a check dam for trapping sediment and water. And the topography beyond the dam shows a possible ephemeral lake just west of the Djoser complex and water flow inside the moat surrounding it. So as the study's authors explain, in the southern section of the moat, we show that the monumental linear rock cut structure consisting of successive deep compartments combines the technical requirements of a water treatment facility, a settling basin, a retention basin, and a purification system.
Wow.
Okay.
So they're like, if you look at the topography and you look at these structures, like, they were moving water in, filtering the sediment out and moving it out, which is what you would need if you're going to build a hydraulic system that needs to be clean water. Right.
Right.
So they're thinking that the intersection of the moat on the pyramid was working as that hydraulic system. It was meant to regulate the flow and improve the water as it moved into a hydraulic elevation mechanism that has yet to have been reported. The idea is, and I was trying to find it last night because I'd seen someone explain this on a YouTube video a while back with a really great 3D representation. The idea is that the architects were raising the stones from the pyramid in the center, like a volcano, using that sediment-free water.
The center of a pyramid?
Yes. So
interesting.
So the idea is that they've set up hydraulic forces and they build the pyramid tower style from the center because they can use the water. Like, what they'll do is I forget what type of tree. I think it was a type of cedar tree. And these limestones, like, if you cut the limestone and you keep it in the water, then it stays soft and doesn't harden. And there's an actual ratio of, like, cedar wood you can tie to the stone and it will float the stone. Right. So what they're saying is like, they'll cut the rocks out of and get them into the water as quick as they can, and then tie the cedars to them so they float.
Add some cedar,
and they'll float the rocks. All of these stones, they'll float the stones, and then using a aqueduct causeway, they'll move these stones up to the pyramid, and with each successful level, they have a central shaft that is watertight, and they can move the stone into that shaft at the bottom, seal it off, and then slowly fill that with water, and it will float the giant stone up to the top of this pyramid.
Wow.
That's
elaborate.
I love this theory because humans have that ingenuity, and none of this,
right?
All of this is more of a mind puzzle than a technology one, right? Like, you think of all those people back at that time, easiest place to live, food's just abundant everywhere, a lot of downtime, a lot of time for religion, and a lot of time to think, how can we build this monumental structure?
Like you were saying earlier, I mean, any of us have done this kind of experience in the bathtub where you play with cups and water and catching that water underneath of it and the air bubbles. So it just takes a Da Vinci type Archimedes style person to figure that out.
Right. Right. And human ingenuity didn't take aliens, took a bunch of smart people.
Did not.
Absolutely.
What if the smart people were the aliens?
Goodness.
Well, I'm sure to their friends they were.
The call is coming from inside the house.
Right. Oh, it's fascinating. I've always been fascinated with the pyramids because they are just such incredible structures. Like, we have structures and roads that can't even last one rainstorm, and these people built things that have lasted millennia.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the cool things about this, and I don't even think the paper specifically said it, but in my own travels of researching pyramids, one of the things that gets in the way is how fast your chisel, like when you're trying to shape the stone, like how fast those chisels would bend and break. But if you're chiseling limestone that's floating in the water so it's still soft... chisel's not going to dull half the time, right? So all of a sudden, there, the amount of workers, because they were saying, like, you're going to need thousands of workers just repairing chisels all day and carting chisels up and down the pyramid. Like, all of a sudden, all that goes away, and you need way less workers to be cutting these stones. Yeah, I think it really works. And there was a guy... I can't remember his name. He claimed he discovered the secrets of the pyramids, and he moved a whole bunch of rocks and shaped them himself in secret.
Mm. Wow. I think I remember hearing about that.
If only they'd left us a playbook or something, like their instructions.
They probably did. It was in the Library of Alexandria.
That's true. They probably did. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Can you imagine if we had all of that knowledge?
God. We might be a hive mind by now.
We might be.
Okay. Yeah. His name was Edward Leeds Scullin. He was a Latvian immigrant and self-taught engineer who single-handedly built the Coral Castle in Florida.
Oh, wow.
Excuse me. It's a place... You can go to, and it says he was known for developing theories of magnetism. But I'm wondering if we go down to the Coral Castle, if we can't find that he was flooding the grounds. Because the whole place was walled off, so people couldn't, they were like, oh, you can't see what he's doing because he's walled it off. Well, what if he walled it off so he could flood it? Anyway, that's a bonus theory. Folks at home, didn't plan on throwing that out there. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about.
You never know which direction we're going to take.
Yeah, I juke and move. Let's talk about the G20 going on right now. Let's talk about some snake oil.
Oh yes.
Oh, snake oil on sale for me. Nothing but snake oil, and it ain't free.
I know you started this to talk about scams, and now it's just become tax reform. Apologies.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about a big old scam.
You know, it is a big old scam. So the G20 has a rotating presidency of the 20 countries that are... part of it. It's like the world's top 20 economies, right? That's the G20.
Yeah, I think that's how they
and
do it. Yeah.
Right now, Brazil is running the G20, and Brazil just had a seismic shift in their politics. They have a leftist president now. It was that okay. It was that right wing fascist guy Bolsonaro, and we managed to get Brazil managed to elect Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. So he's heading this year's G20, and he's stepped out with a global vision to tax the ultra rich.
Love it.
Right?
Okay. Globally. He's talking globally. He's not talking individual countries.
To address the ultra rich who are dodging taxes globally, he's setting out a plan.
Yep.
Right?
Wow.
Big deal. So he wants to, quote, start a dialogue on fair and progressive taxation, including of ultra high net worth individuals, according to a draft communique seen by Politico set to be published.
It
goes on to say, with full respect to tax sovereignty, we will seek to engage cooperatively to ensure that ultra high net worth individuals are effectively taxed. Brazilian Finance Minister Fernando Haddad called it a historic agreement. Well,
yeah.
Even before the G20 talks began, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen dampened the mood by saying, there's no need for a global agreement on taxing billionaires.
Yellen.
To quote her,
breaking my
heart. Tax policy is very difficult to coordinate globally. We think that all countries should make sure that their own taxation systems are fair and progressive.
Can we see her financials? Is she one of these?
Okay.
Or does she have
the ones
we used to
people who she
we used to cover this
that are ultra rich?
Yeah,
like,
we used to cover this on Two Bulls in a China Shop. Probably one of the parts of me that is sad to have seen that gone, because I know it's not covered anymore like it was. There's a revolving door of regulators and private industry. And Janet Yellen, while she does get pulled in to be in the regulation side, when she's not, she's getting paid millions to go speak a night to a group of bankers kind of shit, right? Yes.
And who does she represent?
Yeah, so who's she really out
herself.
Here fighting for? Right. All the time, regulators leave and they get done their regulating, and all of a sudden they've got a job on a spot on a board, or like Yellen, they get these ginormous speaking fees to what give talks about how we don't think billionaires should be taxed properly.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's a billionaire's paying her, so of course she's going to say that, or anybody.
Yeah.
Well, the people with the
you don't bite the hand
power.
That feeds you.
They don't want to give up their power, and that's why we'll never be able to, I think, get them to pay their fair shares, because the money gives them power. They can buy what they want, and sadly our society is set up to honor that. Like, the person that has the most money tends to be the one that influences
makes
the
rules.
Things go.
So Brazil is at least feeling jazzed because they it's a first step, right? And it's the first step G20's never done.
Right.
Right. One participant at the meeting speaking on condition of anonymity said there's no consensus today to create a global tax on the capital of multimillionaires. The idea is to have the theme on the agenda and the first steps discussed. So
you have to have your first step. I get it.
They're capping their expectations. Brazil's currently backed by France, Spain, South Africa, Colombia, and the African Union.
Okay. That's not small.
It's not small. And as we know, global inequalities continue to rise. The Oxfam organization released a study, non-governmental organization Oxfam. The richest 1% of the world have earned more than $40 trillion in a decade, and their taxation is at historically low rates.
Wow.
That's a problem.
French economist Gabriel Zucman estimates that the tax rate for billionaires represents 0.3% of their wealth.
What the
That is fucked up.
I'm paying
that is so fucked
the
up.
Highest tax bracket I've ever been in. And it right? is uh-huh. not 0.3%. Bastards.
No,
it is not.
Near
it. It is not.
It is way more than that. When I was in, okay, I spent a long time in the lowest tax bracket.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to look it up, what it is now. It all raised under the Trump tax laws. People don't,
mm-hmm. of course
people
it did.
Don't realize.
Because we still have to get that money in.
Under him. That's what they told me.
Yeah, I was so mad when that law passed and people were like, hey, our taxes are lowered. I'm like, yeah, for the next 2 years. And then they significantly increase while the rich people's tax cuts stay there. What is wrong with you?
Yep,
read the whole
right.
bill. Okay, yeah, the bottom is 10%. The bottom tax
Yikes.
Bracket is
Yikes.
10%.
And they're paying 0.3.
They're paying 0.3.
So the people who are struggling to even keep a place to live are paying mm-hmm. 10%, while these people who have homes all over the world don't even pay 1%.
Who have more money than some countries. Yeah.
Yeah. That is bullshit. That is snake oil right there.
Yeah. That same economist yep. He's optimistic. He's saying for the first time in history, there's now consensus among G20 countries that the way we tax the super rich must be fixed and a commitment to work together for this. It's an important step in the right direction.
Nice.
However, Germany's finance ministry said it considers the idea of a minimum wealth tax to be irrelevant. So
to what?
Though I think that's them saying that's never going to happen. You'll never get Germany on board.
Oh, that's definitely what they're saying.
I mean,
but the thing is with, you know, representative republics and democracies, it just takes a new election.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In
yeah.
Germany, right? Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what comes of it. I for one, am optimistic. I've never heard of the G20 coming out and saying this stuff before. It does
right.
need to happen. We're in a new gilded age where we've got billionaires can fly to space, and billions of people don't yeah. have enough.
The rest of us can't pay our rent
to eat,
right?
Like it's mm-hmm. it's this weird global gilded age, and it's awful, and it can't just stay there, right? It something's got to give.
It can't sustain.
Yeah,
it can't.
Yeah, it's
well.
Yeah, it is unsustainable. Like we've got.
Okay, Dan,
away.
Just say we're coming up on feel good news because I'm suddenly feeling really bummed.
Oh well, before we get to feel goods, first we got to do some fact checking time.
Oh, Ready. Shit. I was hoping we'd just skip over it.
Look at that. See how she tried to get out of it?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. What do you know? It's fact-checking time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's fact-checking time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the proof that all the kids call fact-checking time.
Hello and welcome to Fact Checking Time, the news show quiz that tests your ability to tell the difference between a news story and something the media has actually deemed worthy of a true fact check. We're here in the Half Cocktails Lounge with Amber, my sister who loves the woo-woo, thinks she's always right too. Amber, how are you doing today?
Woo-woo! I'm good, how are you?
Fantastic. In the hot seat today.
Awesome.
Playing for all the wet food. Jamie Lynn, the druidess who's just so damn good at this. Jamie Lynn, how are you doing today?
I'm not feeling I'm going to be too good at this. That's how I'm feeling.
You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. You are playing for Poncho Cat, co-host of the Half Cocktails News Shorts. And whether you win or lose decides whether he gets wet or dry food for dinner. He is looking at me right now, and he is skeptical. He is skeptical that you...
He can be all skeptical as he wants. You know, Amber got him double the other day, and I'm just saying he's not eating it all. So I think he needs to go on a diet.
Ooh.
After all I did for him...
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus, Poncho.
Okay.
Apparently, you know, a bit too much.
All right. Let's get to the game. I'm going to present to you a series of events, stories, okay, or quotes that were on the internet recently, but only one of them was fact-checked by a media outlet. Could be an article, could be a social media post, could be an interview quote, could be anything. You're going to have 1 minute, mm-hmm, to ask me questions before you have to decide which was fact-checked.
Oh boy. You can do it.
Are you okay. ready?
I'm going to do my best. I have to be. Yes, let's do it.
Okay. 1 minute on the clock. Either.
1 minute.
The NCAA has, the College Sports Association, has to start paying, uh-huh, their college athletes. Or, uh-huh, an Iowa man gave away a ton of scholarships, full rides, to complete strangers. Your 1 minute begins.
Oh, okay. A guy gave away, where was he at?
Iowa.
Iowa. And who is this guy?
Some guy without family that made a bunch of money and died and put in his will to,
okay,
pay for a bunch of strangers to go to college.
And the NCAA, they just started paying people for their ads and whatnot. I'm going to go that, I know we like our sports, but I'm going to go with the guy giving away free money has got to be fact-checked, because who does that?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I liked your reasoning too,
who does that?
A man named Dale Schroeder set up a scholarship with his money. He never married. He had no children. He was a carpenter for the same company for 67 wow. years and only owned two wow. pairs of pants. And,
Oh shit.
It's true. Mr.
Okay,
Schroeder.
That's stupid impressive.
Seriously.
Paid for a whole bunch of people to go to college. All right, and
wow. Okay.
NCAA
fabulous.
Did just have a settlement in their landmark antitrust case, and it's a $2.78 billion right. settlement agreement they have to divide up between student athletes and establish
wow.
and
good
make
on them.
Rules
they should.
And the mm-hmm. structure for how those student athletes it has to do with the licensing agreements with their you know, the merch. You know, they sell mm-hmm, merch mm-hmm. with the college student's likeness, then the college student gets a cut. All right.
It's only fair.
Next round.
Okay, hit me.
Either the boycott of Starbucks is causing a critical decline, according to the CEO in their recent earnings call. Or a man named Robbie Starbuck has initiated a boycott of Harley-Davidson motorcycles over their DEI initiatives.
Oh, that's a tough one. Wow. People like the coffee. But they like fighting the DEI. He's fighting. Named Starbuck. He's fighting Harley Davidson for what?
DEI woke, totally woke DEI policies.
Yeah. How dare we wake up?
I don't even know what to ask. Amber, what should I ask?
Is this Starbucks thing going on right now? Like, how long has it been going on?
Right now.
Because I haven't heard of it. I mean, not that I know. Oh,
I didn't know there was a strike on
people,
them.
People
didn't either.
Boycotting Starbucks globally.
Why are they globally boycotting?
Good question.
I believe it's for mm-hmm. Starbucks DEI inclusion wokeness.
Okay, I know there's a lot of Harley lovers out there, but I'm going to go, everybody needs a coffee. Starbucks is probably going to be fact-checked if it's the DEI thing.
That is correct.
Yes.
Huzzah! Really? Really? I am shocked. I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked. I just hadn't heard anything about the Starbucks and the DEI, but the DEI is a huge problem right now for companies. It's ridiculous.
It really
so,
is.
There's no record that the CEO, Howard Schultz, said anything. And the details on the global boycott are also rather light, as you could tell from my floundering. And then the other story.
I couldn't tell.
Robbie Starbuck, who has more than 500,000 followers on Shitter, is trying to start a boycott of Harley Davidson over its DEI. He already successfully forced John Deere with one of his boycotts that he started.
Wow. You're kidding. No. I don't know how one guy and his followers can do this. That's so terrible.
And his name was Starbucks. So I was like, oh, I noticed the similarity between the two things.
Wow.
All right.
It works.
For bonus points.
Okay, last one.
Poncho, you lucky fucker.
Not bonus food, just bonus points. He's fat enough.
Either during mating season, male giraffes have... Goodness. Have many, many different females pee on their heads so they can smell which one is ovulating and know which one they should mate with.
Okay. I shudder at what the or is going to be.
Or during mating season, male koalas will simply lay on the ground and yell for a female to get over there.
Like, hey, hey, broad, get over here.
I'm down to, what are they doing? I'm down to clown. Get over here. Hey. I got this big old koala meat.
I love it. There. Oh, that's so funny.
Okay.
Which was
so a male giraffe. A male giraffe. Okay, hold on. I got some questions. I got some questions, I think. A male giraffe is getting his face peed on?
Yes.
He's asking for it?
Yes. Well, sort of. The male giraffe puts his face down right next to the female's genitals, and at which point she'll kind of open her legs a little bit,
hey,
squat
baby.
Down, and just let her rip.
Oh, yikes.
Hey.
Oh, okay, you know, we get off on weird
And
interesting.
And it's not just one. The male goes to all of them that he can. Could be as many as 30. Oh,
Lord. Wow. Okay. And the koala, you said koalas are on the ground doing this?
Yeah, they just lie back.
He's just lying there?
They just lie there and start to bellow.
Okay. I'm disturbed because... Come and get this hot.
Yeah, that's time.
I'm disturbed because these are obviously both true, which is odd. Okay, I'm going to go with people have a fascination around golden showers.
Mm.
So I'm going to go with the giraffe, although the koala bellowing for its female is also very enticing. But I'm going to stick with golden showers.
Incorrect. Sorry. It's they fact-checked the...
That's too much work. They want to find out if laying back and just yelling works. Because if it does,
Amber, you're on
right?
it.
That's
I think you're
they
on
fact
it.
Check it.
Wait, I've been trying so hard. I should have just been sitting there going, "Hey, I'm ready." Anybody?
I mean, if it works for koalas, it must work for humans.
You know what? I
get over.
I actually, when I read this article, I gave it a try, but I totally got kicked out of the zoo.
Yikes. Okay, well, good thing you didn't start off with that question, because holy crap.
Well, you know, you gotta save the best for last.
You really do. Well done.
And so that is how koalas and both giraffe both, yeah, that they're both true.
That is so funny.
That's bizarre. You know, whatever floats your boat, we're all equal opportunity.
All right.
Obviously, it works for him.
That's going to do it for Fact Checking Time this week. Join us next time where either I'll solve a mystery with a detective or get mysteried by a detective. No, that's awful. Get mysteried by a detective.
What's mystery detective?
Ah, screw it. I'll fix it in post. Leave it. Count it.
Leave it.
All right, let's talk about some feel good news.
A call for a sip, maybe even a hit, and join us for half cocktails. And join us for half cocktails.
Okay, so a 50-year-old sufferer of Parkinson's disease has what he's described as a life-changing transformation after a new drug treatment. And, excuse me, videos have been shared to show the difference in his shaking. The guy says he's tried every oral medication on the market and nothing has really worked for him. And he's had really bad side effects. He's over in England. In June, they approved a drug for use. And so he's become one of the first patients to receive. It's called Produodopa. And it's like a subdermal under the skin using a pump. So, like, I don't know, remember, IVs are portable now. Like, it's got one of those patches. Like, right. They put the needle in just, like, a little bit, and then the patch sticks to it, and then he's just got, carries it on his hip. Boom.
Right.
And that gives it a gradual release of the medication, so it smooths out the day for him.
Okay.
So while he previously would struggle to control all those spastic upper body movements, the video now shows he's just easily, after 7 days of treatment, he gets up and he's just making a cup of coffee.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's not in pain anymore.
That's phenomenal.
And he says he's able to get a full night's sleep. And he said in the past, if he stopped taking his last tablet at 9 p.m., that would wear off and the symptoms all come back and just kill this whole night. But now this the slow release, which isn't available in the U.S. yet, hasn't had any side effects. It's just, just loss of pain and the ability to move a lot more normally.
That's incredible. As somebody who has chronic pain, I know I bring it up a lot probably on here, but that's amazing.
Yeah.
I hope that research continues and can find the same results with other illnesses, because that's phenomenal.
I also feel like because the EU has more stringent health stuff, which is crazy. Like, if you live in a country with socialized healthcare, all of a sudden the standards for healthcare go way up. Right? Because when the government's paying for it, the government doesn't want to pay for bullshit and they want it to work.
Right.
Anyway.
No, they just let us pay for bullshit.
I feel like if it gets passed in the EU, we should just go ahead and pass it here.
Yeah, that's it's phenomenal.
Feel
like,
good
that
stuff.
That would really be a game changer.
I wouldn't be surprised if wealthy people with Parkinson's just start flying over to get there. I'd move to the EU this, right?
Like,
why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?
No, I absolutely would. If they came up with something to help the chronic pain of fibromyalgia, I'd move there in a heartbeat. Because, and in fact, I was just talking about this yesterday, like, living with chronic pain fucking sucks.
Oh, it's awful.
You don't ever sleep well. And if you don't sleep well, your body can't heal. It's like a vicious cycle. And I'm always tired.
Right?
And I'm always sleepy. And I'm always groggy. And, like, it would just be an absolute game changer to be
able
to...
It's hard to be in a good mood, too, when you're
in control the pain. Yeah.
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 Fantastic
so,
stuff.
Kudos to them. Keep it up, UK. Keep it up. And you'll
some
get
true
some
feel good stuff.
New residents.
All right. Sadly,
for
we do
sure.
have to bring this episode to an end.
Oh,
we hope everybody had a
already?
Great time. I do already.
It was
before
fun.
We go, I need to thank Goliath National Bank. Their slogan will surely stand the test of time. The bigger the bank, the harder you fall. Goliath National Bank. Looks like we just don't have any time left for the unbelievable life hack to get your groceries for free, and only the law can stop you.
Dang it.
But something tells me the life hack is theft. Sorry, folks, that one's on me.
I mean, it always is.
Yeah.
It's never my fault we go wrong. Jeez.
I need to hashtag hard truths. I need to give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and the Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. Amber, any final words, thoughts, or phrases before we say goodbye?
Yeah, if I'm not back in 5 minutes, just wait a little longer.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And Jamie Lynn, I'll take any silence from you as that you're cooking dinner tonight, and I'm just going to go and lay in the bedroom and bellow. Yep. All right. Sounds good. All right. Need to give a shout out to Science Congeniality and the Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. Any final words, Ricky, thoughts, or phrases before we say goodbye? Oh, I just said that. Damn it. Damn it, Dan.
You're so tricky.
Yeah. See what I did? Have a wonderful day,
I
folks.
See what you do.
If you had a good time with us today, you know what to do. Tell someone that needs us. You can find us over at halfcocktails.com on the TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. If you're in a giving mood, go ahead. Go show your support over at Patreon or halfcocktails.com/shop. We'll have all those links in the episode's description. All right. And Jamie Lynn, any thoughts, final words, phrases before we go? Oh, you know what? I think I hear her back there. Oh, she's laying down and bellowing. I gotta go.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation. Oh, we're just leaving you half-cocked. Half-cocked, half-cocked. We had a good time talking today. But even best times, eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration, oh, we're just leaving half-cocked.